Okay, good morning, everyone. As you can tell, I'm not Geshe Gelick and I'm not Geshe Thampo. Geshe Thampo is getting ready to leave for Tibet, and Geshe Gelick is assisting them, so I was asked to step in. And as Sandy says, we do have a crew from WRAL here this morning, so we're glad to have them. For people who don't know me, my name's Robbie Watkins. I've been a member of the Center for almost 25 years now, and I'm one of the teachers of the Discovering Buddhism modules. Who's here for the very first time today? If you could just raise your hands. Okay, so a couple new people. Welcome. Glad to have you here. We'll begin with our prayers while the young people are in the room with us, and then they'll leave and go to their classes. And then we'll do some meditation and have a discussion. Who's going to lead the prayers? Are you our prayer leader, Steve? You're in the seat. I don't even have a prayer book. Do you want to be the prayer leader, Jill? Yeah, because I don't know the routine that they do on Sunday mornings always.
Oh, 34 first.
Page 34, the four measurables.
Take people out of their comfort zone. Yeah, and
that's what I'm here for.
Yeah.
Ready? May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness.
May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering.
May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and hatred for enemies.
Page 37.
Kids, you want to start it? Sem chen
tam che de no de we kyu tam de ra ju chi do ya tam do ya di gur sham de wa gur si do tam de de wa Dham ni jaya gyurshi Yei mui chab gong ni dham yuewe dham jam pa min pa
Wonderful. So now we'll do Chen Rei Zig's mantra. Everybody know that one? Om Mani
Padme Hu. Om Mani Padme Hu. Om Mani Padme Hu. Om Mani Padme Hu. Om Mani Padme Hu. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Mani Padme Hum.
Okay, who knows what's next? There you go.
Oh, Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re So Ha. Om Tare Tu 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 Tu So Ha. Om Tare Tu Re So. Okay. Children may go to their classes, young people. Uh-huh. Okay. Well, it's very depleted when the children leave. Okay, let's do some meditation. This will make dynamite TV, yeah. 10 minutes of silent meditation. Your ratings are going to go through the roof on this one, okay? Yeah, so we'll just start with some meditation to concentrate our minds, become a little bit more focused. As always, we begin by checking our posture. The most important part of the posture is that our back is a little bit straighter than we normally sit, not rigid, but straight. Our head is straight on our shoulders, not tilted to one side or the other, maybe just a couple degrees in front of the vertical. Our eyes are either just slightly opened or very lightly closed. Our mouth is lightly closed, not clenched. Our shoulders are down and back a little bit so that our chest is open. Upper arms are away from our torso so that some air can pass through. And we can sit either with our hands on our knees or with right hand on left, with thumbs touching. And our legs are in a position that we find comfortable and stable. If you're sitting on a cushion, it's helpful to be a little bit to the front of the cushion. If you're sitting in a chair, have your feet flat on the floor. So take a couple minutes and just scan your body, a couple seconds and scan your body, looking for any sources of discomfort or tension, and address those now so that the posture during the meditation is established, self-maintaining, and non-distracting. And now we'll take three deep breaths from the abdomen, with the stomach expanding on the in-breath, so our diaphragm is pulled down, and contracting towards our spine on the out-breath. And now we allow our breathing to return to its normal pattern. And as always, we begin by establishing our motivation. Whatever has motivated us to come to Kadampa Center this morning and to sit in meditation is a valid motivation. If we just wanted to get away from some of the stress of our daily lives, that's fine. If we came out of a sense of curiosity and just wanted to explore the teachings of the Buddha, that's great. If we wanted to get a little peace of mind for ourselves, that's a wonderful motivation. But it's said that the highest motivation, the most powerful motivation, the most beneficial motivation is that of what we call bodhicitta, the great motivation, the great mind, the motivation that everything we do, even just sitting for a few minutes in silent meditation, is motivated by the always present wish to become enlightened for the benefit of others. Two parts. I want to become enlightened so that I can benefit others. I know that in my present state of confusion and lack of wisdom, I can't do it. I have to work on my own mind so that I can be a greater benefit to my family, my friends, my co-workers, and all living beings. So just for a minute, sit and generate that motivation. It may not come easily. It may even seem a little bit insincere, but that's okay. Just think about those words for a minute as the motivation for the meditation that's to follow. And having established our motivation, we begin the actual meditation. And we're just going to do a simple breathing meditation. Simple but difficult. We're just going to place our awareness, our mind, our concentration on the physical movement of the breath in and out through our nostrils. Nothing more, nothing less than that. Mind directly perceiving movement of the breath in and out. And every time we notice that our mind has wandered off to another subject, to something we have to do when we leave the center, or a physical ache, or a memory of something that happened yesterday, we just gently drop that and come back to the breath. Over and over and over, we bring the mind back to the chosen object of meditation. And that is meditation, training our mind, becoming familiar with our mind, and how it works. And now we can end our meditation with a dedication, acknowledging that we've done something positive by sitting quietly and working with our mind and generating the wish that that positive energy not be lost, but may it ripen in the future in a way that benefits all living beings. And you can relax your concentration. So that ran him away. Okay, good. You can use that to replace the logs in the fireplace at Christmas time. They keep the film. Okay. Well, welcome to what is going to be a discussion, not a teaching. I'm filling in at the last moment for Geshe Gelick. So audience participation is required, or we will be adjourning quite early. And as people know, there are thousands and thousands of people watching us around the world as these teachings are streamed. So when you want to speak, make sure you have a microphone. So Steve has one here, and I think there's going to be one. Jill will have one on the other side. So when I was scratching my head, trying to think about what we could discuss this morning, Susan Potter said that she was very attached to talking about attachment. So I'm going to ask Susan to just give us a little idea why you think that's something you would like to talk about this morning. Put you on the spot.
Yeah, thanks, Robbie.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Well, through the years, I've heard several teachings on attachment, and as opposed to clinging and grasping as the causes of karma. The causes of karma, the causes of suffering are karma and delusion.
Mm-hmm.
And attachment is in there. And attachment is our sense that something, it's an exaggerated sense that something will really make us happy. It exaggerates the good qualities.
Mm-hmm.
And, or it exaggerates the bad qualities when we look at the flip side of attachment, which is aversion.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been thinking lately how in the Four Immeasurables we have that concluding sentence, may, and since I'm on the spot, I may not get it quite right, may all beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends and aversion for enemies. And so I've just been thinking about how all that comes together in our minds of not exaggerating the good qualities of someone or a being or an item or a place and not exaggerating the negative qualities as well.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to have this a mind of equanimity.
Okay. Thank you. Good introduction.
Go.
Yeah. As Susan mentioned in the teachings of the historical Buddha, attachment is considered one of the three main delusions that we're prone to and that cause suffering for us, along with karma, the results of our past actions. And then the three delusions that we're prone to also cause suffering, attachment being one. Does anybody know what the other two main delusions are? Ignorance and anger. Okay, so attachment, anger, the wish to harm others. Okay, so anger is a little bit different from aversion. Okay, aversion is really the flip side of attachment. Anger is the actual wish to harm others. And then ignorance, which is not seeing reality as it is. Okay, that's the most profound and the basic problem. But those three delusions, attachment, anger and ignorance, along with our karma, are the source of all our problems, according to the Buddha. They are the cause of our problems. So if we want to be free of suffering, which the Buddha said is completely possible, to be free from suffering, we have to remove those delusions from our mind stream. We have to get rid of attachment, we have to get rid of anger, and we have to get rid of ignorance. And that, when you think about it, is actually a very positive message, in that the Buddha is saying those are not an intrinsic, inherent part of your mind. That is not who you are. Those are qualities or habitual ways of thinking that can be removed and ultimately completely eliminated. He said it's possible with this ordinary, everyday mind that we all have to be completely free of attachment, completely free of anger, and completely free of ignorance. And he gave us some very specific steps on how to do that. But we won't be covering all of those this morning. So we know what the other two, so we're going to concentrate on attachment this morning. Anybody have a problem with attachment? Who here? If not, you can go ahead and leave. You won't find this discussion in the least useful. So I think we'll start off by defining attachment. I think it's important to distinguish the difference between attachment and love, because frequently they're very intermingled. Identify the problems that attachment causes us, and then what are the ways that we can eliminate attachment, or at least weaken its grasp on our mind. So the first question I'm going to throw out for discussion is, what is attachment? Susan talked on this, but I'd like to hear other people's opinions on what is attachment.
I guess, from my understanding, attachment is like the desire for a permanence in permanent reality, like the desire for something to be constantly with you and almost identifying with it mm-hmm. when it's not the nature of its being.
Mm-hmm. Identify or wish for it to be unchanging,
mm-hmm.
to always be the way it is now. This person is always going to be this way, or that's what I want, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm, that's good. Anyone else? Okay, please.
Attachment is also your mind's expectation of things.
Mm-hmm.
So I expected to be able to run the yellow light, but when the car stopped in front of me, I did not expect them to stop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thus, I got angry.
Yeah. An expectation of things are going to be a certain way.
Right.
Yeah.
And when you get thwarted, mm-hmm. issues arise.
Okay. Good.
It's our wise young man.
So what I kind of think of attachment is, I mean, samsara is, not to be negative, but I kind of view it as...
Samsara is negative. You don't have to worry about saying that.
But it's kind of like falling. And I kind of see that as we're falling through samsara, we have...
It's like falling?
Falling, yeah.
Okay.
We have, like, rocks or other things in there around us, and we grab onto them thinking that we'll... I mean, I guess you guys kind of get what I'm trying to say, but we take false refuge,
mm-hmm.
and we seek attachment, or we become attached to things, thinking that it'll help us as we fall.
So. Okay.
I think part of what Susan was saying is, liking the good things and disliking the bad things. So I think part of that's attachment is the labels that you're putting on it. When you're looking at a situation, you're saying, okay, these parts are good and these parts are bad. You're picking apart these things that are actually just part of, they're part of a whole. It's not separate at all. So I think the way that you label things can be a form of attachment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. David?
I think myself and other people often find we're attached to the idea perhaps of acquiring some material thing. Perhaps it's a new house or a new car or just a new shirt. So you look at it online on the screen and it looks wonderful and the text says it's wonderful. And leads you to believe that if you only had it, you would have endless happiness. Just click.
Please buy David that shirt, please. He's suffering.
Just click. So it's that exaggeration of the qualities.
Yeah.
Which then leads to disappointment later if you really do acquire the object. And I think it applies to people, too. Now, I often think it's rather positive. You know, there's that glow around the loved ones, that wonderful dog you have, or the wonderful spouse. And there always seems to be this golden glow around that person or object. There may be some positive things to that because it helps you over all the difficulties that you may have with them.
Yeah.
So I think there's both good and bad to it.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. We'll get to that in a minute. It gives a difference between love and attachment. But if we all weren't subject to attachment, the advertising industry would be non-existent. I mean, isn't that their basic stock and trade playing on attachment? That's how things are sold. Yeah. We have a lot of fans going up in the back.
Okay. Hi. So for me, attachment not really to inanimate things, but more of to people. I've noticed personally that me, it comes out of a place of fear for losing someone that I feel like is necessary to my life, as to where I kind of suffer a little bit with abandonment issues, and just letting people go. And so sometimes I hold on to people that I think are necessary in order for me to function as a person, and they end up being more toxic to my life. But I have this fear of letting them go that I won't make it without them. So for me, it's just learning how to be happy within yourself instead of depending on other people for happiness. So,
Thank you.
I think I have more questions. I always have more questions than answers. So just two quick questions. Addiction, I see, I mean, I think this is maybe an obvious statement, but as a form of attachment, yeah?
I don't know. I'll leave that open to the group to discuss.
For everybody.
Yeah.
And the second one for me does there exist a healthy attachment to love?
Okay, we'll get to that. Those are both great questions, yeah. Keep those in the back of your mind.
Not in a unhealthy way, but just I love someone and I want to keep loving them. So yeah.
Okay.
For me, attachment, I mean, in addition to people and things, I think that sometimes, in my case, for example, when you have an ambition and you work very hard for something and it just doesn't happen, being able to say, well, you know, it's not the right time, it's part of the journey. And for example, in career-wise, having an ambition of reaching, for example, a promotion and working really hard for that promotion for years, and then it doesn't happen, and it's sort of like, well, if it doesn't happen, it's kind of the end of the world, and it's not necessarily the end of the world. It's something that perhaps is part of the journey, and whatever I had to learn from that experience, I learned it, and it's time to move on and perhaps, you know, find what is next.
Yeah, good. See? I think we had a hand over here. Yeah.
Okay. One thing I wanted to mention that Liz and I talked about yesterday is, what's the term that you told me about that's the marketing thing? FOMA? Or
FOMO.
Fear of missing out. I didn't know what this was. And so to think that marketing people are capturing our minds, and they know what our minds are doing, and then they're accelerating it by saying, if you don't buy this, it's in 3 hours, it's gone, and you know, all those kind of things makes me so, it's just sad to think that they already know what our minds are doing, and they're putting the exaggeration juice on top of exaggeration, and we want it so bad that we are going to miss if we don't buy it. And I think that's frightful. Just wanted to say it's frightful. Thanks, Liz.
One of the problems I have with defining attachment is delineating between attachments and commitments. I have commitments to myself, my family, and others, and I'm not sure where healthy commitments start and stop and where healthy attachments fold into those commitments.
Okay. Good question. So you have one. We'll kind of explore all these. I'm not ignoring them, but yeah.
I'm new to Buddhism, so this is sort of a statement, sort of a question. It seems to me that attachment is when you put the hope of your happiness in something or someone else rather mm-hmm. than inside yourself. Mm-hmm. If you're attached to your home, it's you want your home to make you happy. If you're attached to a person, you want that person mm-hmm. to make you happy, when all that has to come from inside. Mm-hmm. At least that's my perception of
it. Okay, good. Okay, great comments. Let's see, Steve, did you? Okay, one more, and then.
Oh, okay, is this on?
Yeah.
I was just going to say something about an antidote for me. It's something to do with trust. A young man up there said samsara is something like falling and attachment. It feels like that resonated with me. It's like grasping something to hold on, because otherwise what would happen? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the source of the action for me in a lot of different scenarios. So trusting, just trusting in the universe helps a little bit to let go.
Okay, great. All good comments. I'm going to go back to what Susan said at the beginning. The official Buddhist definition of attachment is exaggerating the good qualities of an object. It's not saying that the object doesn't have good qualities. The chocolate cake may be very tasty. Okay, the person may be very beautiful. Okay, the house may be very comfortable. But attachment is exaggerating those good qualities, projecting onto the chocolate cake, the wonderful house, the beautiful person, qualities that they do not have. So it is a delusion. We are seeing things in that object that do not exist. Our mind is projecting onto the wonderful house, the beautiful person, the chocolate cake, qualities that absolutely do not exist there. And basically it's thinking that that object can make me happy permanently, that this is the source of the end of my problems, okay? That the chocolate cake, the beautiful person, the wonderful house will always and permanently and unchangingly exist that way. So it's not saying we don't see good qualities, that we don't like things, that we don't say, I like chocolate cake more than pepperoni pizza. It's not like we just turn into a bowl of oatmeal and don't care. But it's that we see things realistically, and we start to weaken that delusion, that projecting onto objects qualities that absolutely do not exist in the object. And that's what attachment is. And similarly, aversion, which is really attachment in reverse, is projecting negative qualities. This person is awful and will always make me unhappy. That's another delusion, okay? It's not saying that the person maybe is very selfish or acts in unskillful ways, but projecting qualities onto them that they don't have. So that's the Buddhist definition of attachment. Okay, it is a delusion. It is seeing things that do not exist. First, we see things that don't exist. Okay, we're hallucinating. And two, the worst part of it is we believe our hallucinations. You know, sometimes you know you're hallucinating, but in attachment, we don't even know that we're hallucinating. We believe that those qualities really are in that person. So I have to have that person. Okay, so that's just the Buddhist definition of attachment. People may find that helpful. So I want to follow up on a couple of comments. What's the difference between attachment and love? Can you have love without being attached? Or having commitments, you know, or having preferences or liking things? What is unattached love like? Does that appeal to people? Do you say, no, I want the attachment. That gives me a charge. I like the attachment. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, I think that love is just like, it's genuinely being happy that something exists, and it's appreciating something or someone just exactly the way it is. But then attachment is, you know, it's needing to be something to be a certain way. So I don't think they can actually really go together, because as soon as you start needing something to be a certain way, being attached like that, then you're not really appreciating it just the way it is. So you're mm-hmm. not actually loving it.
Okay, good. Back behind you. Wait, behind you first, Susie. Yeah.
for me, the way I understand it, Buddhist love is just wanting someone to be happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the
without
Buddhist
any,
definition.
Without any self-motivation. And I can tell you personally...
It's not, I want this person to be happy with me.
Right.
And I want this person to be happy, period.
And actually,
end of discussion.
And actually, this year I've done a lot of meditation on this whole thing about society, meeting that one person, and Buddhist love, and I'm having a really, really hard time seeing how both can coexist. Mm-hmm. And I'm a lot happier when I just want people to be happy.
Mm-hmm.
All the other stuff just, you know, it complicates my life.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Mm-hmm. And somewhere, I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me. And this isn't sour grapes, but it doesn't make sense to me that externally society puts pressure on you to pick one person. Then I come here where it says, okay, I'm going to treat everybody with equanimity.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, how can I pick one person and still be in equanimity?
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe I'll keep that on the side and then treat everyone else.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so it's a struggle, and I'm learning from both of them, and it's been a very valuable exercise in my mind.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Hello. Well, growing up in society, or I guess whatever culture taught me prior to, you know, being introduced to the temple, when I thought of love, I always thought of, like, you know, you love your family members, you love someone who you're in a relationship with, always essentially was attachment, but I didn't know it as that definition, but I think it partially was. You know, then when I got introduced to Buddhism and whatnot and learned some of the teachings, you know, the definition that was presented to me was roughly that, you know, happiness is wanting, love is wanting peace and happiness for others, period, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is a better way of thinking about it, because it's a less selfish way of thinking about it. It's a more of wanting good for others without wanting anything in return. Brings more happiness for self and treating others better. Now, it is difficult, you know, when it gets into a situation to where it is a family member, a close friend, or someone mm-hmm. you're in a relationship with, and then, of course, you do put expectations on them, and naturally so. I think we're human beings, and that's just natural. So maybe I'm just stating the obvious, but striking the balance between the two of, you know, being able to be in a relationship with someone, yet at the same time just want peace and happiness for them and try to detach in that manner, you know, is something that's difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it does require a lot of work because, you know, we have feelings too. I might say, well, let me treat this person in a certain way so that they feel peace and happiness, right? Because I know that what's going to bring them peace and happiness. Well, in the same way, I'm a human being, and so there's certain things that are going to make me happy and make me unhappy. So, mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe I'm kind of bringing to the light that it's like another question, like, mm-hmm. well, if I'm doing things to try to make them happy based on their attachments, then how can I expect to, you know, not be attached myself? But,
yeah.
I don't know, kind of my thoughts.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else?
Yeah.
Love and attachment, yeah.
Well, Robbie, to expand on the love being wanting someone else to be happy, and you take that a step further. So if that person to be happy has to leave you,
mm-hmm.
you have to be happy, you know, that they're going to be happy
uh-huh.
without you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a very difficult
yeah.
thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very difficult. Okay, yeah. We'll go here and then here.
Trying to think of the right words to put it.
Hold on just a second. I think we have a commercial break. Okay. Yeah, okay. Go on. Hey. Okay, back to the discussion. Yes.
So continuing off of that, for another way, I've also even looked at attachment, and that can even go hand in hand with both love and even commitments. Attachment is almost like extending your sense of self toward another object or to another being or a person. So when you're extending that sense of self, you identify with that person, that being, or that concept. And when that thing falls away, obeys its nature of impermanence, you know, you have to say, of course. Otherwise, with that attachment, with that extension of yourself, you feel like you've lost something. You feel like you've lost a part of yourself. Mm-hmm. And so for me, the difference between that attachment and, let's say, a selfless love is to really expand that sense of self toward all beings, identifying with all beings, that their happiness is my happiness, their suffering is my suffering. And then love then is less more of the attraction to a specific being and extending that sense of self to one being, but trying to open it as much as you can to all beings. It's pretty much the bodhisattva way, mm-hmm. to constantly expand that sense of self and identity with all beings, to attempt to help all beings. But then when we do have these partners, when we do have someone that we do feel that attraction or love towards, that's also even a great practice of detachment, how to constantly make them happy and not focusing on just our happiness, and seeing that as, I guess, a way or like even a training to prepare us to how to still expand that selfless love toward other beings.
Yeah.
And even with commitments, attachment and commitment, you're attached to something, you're again wanting that permanent nature in an impermanent reality. You're constantly wanting it to live forever, to thrive, and to be a source of your happiness. Whereas a commitment is more so you see things more objectively and see where this is of benefit, where this could be objectively a benefit to you or other beings, and you act accordingly. You're not attached to it or seeking that commitment or that idea as the source of your happiness, but it's a skillful means, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. I just want to, one word you used was detached, and that's not really the goal in how we usually think of the word detachment, which implies withdrawn or cold. The opposite of attachment really is love. Love without attachment, yeah. But great comment, thank you. Anyone, what's a lot, children, can you be unattached to your children? Still love them? That's about the closest relationship.
It's quite an education to have children. And I look at it, as this gentleman might have said, that I think this is what you said, it's a great practice. And I expect them to do something I don't like. And when they do, practice loving them.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's go in the back, and then we'll come up. Yeah.
I'm not a mom, but I am a daughter. And I know that my mom drives me crazy. And I still see her for how she is. She has her flaws. And she has what makes her a great mom in my eyes. And at the end of the day, I still love my mom unconditionally and deeply. And I know she's going to do things that make me just want to, you know, I wouldn't change it. And that's how I know that my love for my mom is unattached, because she does things that make, you know, that make me upset. And at the end of the day, I still forgive her. We forgive one another, and we still accept each other for who we are.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think the relationship with children is, that one's more about commitment. It's definitely, there's a lot of love there, and it is possible to love everyone the way that you love your child, if you truly work on it for a long time, I guess. It's possible, but the relationship with the child is commitment, and it's saying that you have this relationship and you're going to do these things for this person. And I think commitment is like saying you're going to do something and sticking with it. So you can have different types of relationships with people, and those are more like defined by the commitment that you have to them. If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm hiding. So here's my thing. My thing is, I think attachment is a lot about control. You can't control outcomes.
Uh-huh.
You can't control any outcomes. And when I think about love versus attachment, we've all had love go wrong, you know, romantically, and also in our families, where we are given messages about love that are maybe not so functional. And so you know, I seem to be coming up against a couple of those edges lately and realizing that I don't want to dance the way I've been taught. That's not functional, both romantically and also in my family of origin. I want to do something different. And I'm really grateful for Kadampa because there's another option, and it's a lovely option. And what's really freeing is I don't have to try to change anybody. I don't have to try to, you know, I don't have to attach in that way anymore. I don't have to do any of that anymore. All I have to do is breathe. Many times there's nothing I have to do but just love them. And then maybe all the stuff that gets put on me will, I can't control that. But sometimes I think love makes things very self-evident. If you walk a clean path, you know what I mean? If your heart is in the right place, if you think the best you can for these, you know, situations, in these circumstances, if you speak in the gentlest way without wanting to harm, if you shut up when you're mad and you want to lash out, because that's just equally as important not to do as it is to do, and then you just try to do your best action. I think that if you repeat often, like a good shampoo, then eventually it becomes just your way. And then all the other stuff goes away with it. Like you change your karma. And I think that when it comes to people around you, parents or exes or children, you have to realize they have their own way, their own karma. And you're part of it, but you can't control it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, for me, what attachment is. And I also have to try to stop getting ensnared by how the old patterns want to pull you in. That's hard. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Okay. Habit, old habits, yes. Thank you. Okay.
So, I'm going to expand on what this lady back here said, and I'm going to advise everyone to take the Discovering Buddhism courses. I've taken all but two of the modules, and last summer, by the time I went down to visit my family of origin, I had taken the emptiness module, and I don't pretend to understand emptiness, but by golly, that really helped me. When my mother and my sister tried to press my buttons, and my sons were amazed, they said, "You didn't react." And it's just, I just let it go. And it is possible to do that. I'm still trying to figure out emptiness, but mm-hmm. I think that module really helped.
Thank you. Elise.
I just want to say, recently I read a definition of happiness that was really underscores and summarizes what everyone's been saying here. And the definition was, happiness is the peace of mind you get when your expectations meet reality.
Mm-hmm.
So if you expect that everybody or and everything has some good qualities, some negative qualities, and some neutral qualities, and you're not going to know which of these will manifest, and that you can handle whatever is going to happen, then you will always be happy and have peace of mind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, great. I mean, that's getting rid of attachment and getting rid of ignorance, because it's seeing things as they are. It's working on two delusions at the same time if we have that attitude. I think there's one over here.
I just wanted to say, back to the idea of parenting, that I think it's impossible for us not to have attachment to our children because we're biologically programmed as parents to be delusional.
Uh-huh.
I always want the best for my kids, and I always expect the best out of them. And so as a result, I'm always going to have these delusional expectations.
Uh-huh.
And it comes back to the idea of the happiness, that so often they're not who I expect them to be. And as a result, my happiness becomes upset, and then my attachment becomes all out of whack. And it's hard, especially when kids are growing and they're trying to figure out who they are.
Mm-hmm.
Because as parents, I don't know where the reality starts and where the delusions start.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's tough. So it's hard for me to have expectations for my kids that are realistic, because I'm programmed to be delusional.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Great discussion. Next topic I'm going to throw out is, what are the problems that we've touched on? What problems is attachment a problem, and what problems does it cause? How is attachment a problem? How does it cause us to suffer? Yeah, okay.
Okay, hi again. So I guess this, what I'm going to bring up, it's not really attachment. Like, it's not my attachment. It's more attachment of other people to me. See, I'm an empath. So people, I mean, I've been told people just meet me and they're like, oh, I can trust him entirely. I can tell him everything. And so, I mean, a lot of, like, good, meaningful friends, they trust me and I trust them because I'm somebody they can talk to. But sometimes there are these people and they come to me and, you know, I offer emotional intelligence and support, but they kind of abuse that and they don't make any changes in their lives and they just come to me again and again just to tell me their problems, and they don't make any changes and they come back again and again, and I call those people psychic vampires because they're coming to me and they're taking my happiness away. So I don't know. But when I think about that, I also think about compassion in Buddhism, because that's a very big concept. And I think, I mean, these people make me unhappy, but I don't want to pick and choose people. I feel discriminating like that. So I guess I'm kind of wondering from a Buddhist perspective what I should do about that.
I think in situations like that, you have to remember that we're all experiencing this imperfect human reality. We're all suffering. People suffering in different ways. It could be harmful to other people. It could be harmful to themselves. Not make sense to you. But I just think you have to remember that everyone is suffering, and it's not intentional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think one of the negative ways attachment affects you is attachment to outcome. I mean, I could go home and my house could be burned down. And just, what happened? And it's just the outcome of a relationship or driving home or anything. It's a real lesson when it doesn't come out the way you expect.
You can always say, do you want me to fix that or do you want me to listen? That's always a good one.
Okay.
To me, I think that because we live in samsara, I mean, we live in this world and suffering is the reality of this world. And we don't like to suffer. We, in our mind, suffering is something bad. We have this correlation, you know, with something that we don't like, with something that is bad. So with attachment, once you make the connection that something that happened brings you pleasure, it creates first wanting to have that object or experience or feeling of pleasure over and over and over again. And since the very nature of this world is ever changing, it's not going to last. So you'll only have it for a little bit or for as long as it lasts, and which is not going to be forever. And then it'll go away, and then you'll want more. So you look for another thing. So you're always, I mean, your mind will always keep looking for something to substitute that which has gone. And then the second thing is, I forgot what I was going to say. Mm-hmm. So you will never get that forever. So it creates addiction. You get addicted. And you create more suffering. That's the second thing. That instead of having permanent happiness, you create more suffering. So those are the two things that I think attachment brings.
Okay, thank you. Yeah.
I like what you just said a lot. And to piggyback on that, attachment really causes suffering for me personally in ways that it always gives you something like an objective or a goal or an obstacle to that gets in between you and mental happiness. And it makes you think that going for that goal or objective, or if you could just control that one thing, then you'd have that mental happiness. But you'd never realize that you have the possibility to have that mental happiness in the present moment.
Yeah. If I just get this, I'll be happy. Then I get that. If I just get that, I'll be. It's endless. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Hands. Maybe. Problems caused by attachment.
I think a lot of it is. The expectations, because you, suffering is caused by things that you've used.
Let's see, hold the mic a little closer to you, Matt. Okay.
Okay, I think a lot of suffering is caused by things that people view as being bad, but you can really only see something as bad if you've got the attachment to it, if you expect it to be a different way. Like, if you look at something, you're like, oh, that's a bad thing. It's only because you expect that it should be a different way. And that's how it causes the suffering, is because you're expecting it to be a different way and you're uncomfortable with the way that it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it doesn't, you know, it's not necessarily big things. It's just like, you know, there's not enough salt in the soup or something. And there's just a little moment there. The mind is disturbed. It's not happy. Yeah. Because you're attached to it being one way. And you get over that pretty quickly, but, I mean, there's just so many instances, yeah.
Someone in the back asked earlier about how addiction ties into attachment, I think was the question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the way I see it is addiction is a good example of looking for happiness with a short-term solution, and not seeing that there's no long-term happiness within whatever you're addicted to. So you get caught in that cycle of getting that short-term solution to trying to be happy, right? Mm-hmm. It does make you happy, but only briefly. And then you fall really hard. And then you never see the long-term, and then you believe that you need it. So it's this exterior thing that you're using to make you happy, but it only provides a short-term relief or escape. So I think that's the way I view attachment with addiction. Yeah. I don't know if that was the question, but I don't think it ever got talked about.
Thank you.
So it's better to, you know, find resolution within yourself, because that's a long-term solution to the happiness, or, you know, whatever's needing to be filled. Because that will make you happy long term. So.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah,
I just wanted to I keep thinking of Venerable Rubino when we talk about, and I've heard several people say, you know, I have to treat people equally, and I want everyone to be equally happy. And Rubino says you have to wish, have the heartfelt wish for everyone else to be happy. But you have to understand, use a little bit of wisdom, and say that some people need to be a long way from you, whether they're toxic or physically dangerous or anything else. And I think that that's something that one of our delusions is that we get confused about, you know, oh, I want everyone to be happy and I want to be everyone's friend. And that's not the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, you want them, but you recognize their karma or whatever has made them dangerous to you or others.
Uh-huh. So. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have to combine it with some wisdom. Yes. Let's see. Right, Jill here in the front, next to Elise.
I wanted to touch back to, there was a discussion previously about parenting, and I wanted to share an experience which was probably one of the most important experience I have had in my life, and it happened probably 2 years ago. I'm a mother of two young children. My mother and my parents did an extraordinary job. I'm very grateful to my parents. I have a wonderful family. But I did see how my mom made huge sacrifices for us to do well, to go to school, and, you know, I know they're very proud of us. But I did see how she sacrificed a lot about herself, things she could have done better for her. Like, for example, you know, once we left home, she wrote a few books, and it was something that she could have done much earlier, and I don't know why she waited. Oh, actually, I know why she waited so long, right? And but now I have these two children, and like 2 years ago, I think, there was this major news when the... And when there was a picture in the newspaper of this young child washed out in Turkey. And that was a very hard week for me. I was emotionally drained. I was sad to a level that I had never been. And I remember looking at that picture, and all I could think was in the mother. And so there was a mother that one day, perhaps the day before, tied off his shoes because I could see his little shoes with the lace. And I remember picturing that mother putting those laces on and putting those shoes, and I was thinking about me and my husband every morning doing the same thing. And then there was him, right, washed out in some water far away from mom. And I mean, it was so hard. And I remember thinking about that image for days. Productivity at work was zero, and I remember just thinking about it and thinking about it. And then I came home and I saw my children, and I saw their face, and I said, you know, your face, I mean, how do I say this? You are not any better. You're no more important than that child. That was a very important realization for me, to see that child and say, you know, that could have been my Marina, that could have been my Mateo, and that child is not any worse than you, and you are no more special than him. You have more privilege, but that's it. And I say it's the most important, one of the most important things that happened to me, because that's when I realized, look, I don't cry now when I think about it, because I realized at that moment that I'm really an instrument. And I, every day I see my children, every time they do something wrong, I mean, they're 4 and a half, and I mean, what wrong can they do at this point, right? I mean, they're not teenagers, that's when really bad things happen. So I'm like, I mean, you know. But I look at them, and I'm like, and I look at them, and I always think, like, I am an instrument, and I'm going to do my better to do you the best, you know. Education was important in my family. I know, you know, I'm going to give you a loving home. And that's it. I'm an instrument. And my expectation, I don't want to say that I have low expectations. I'm putting, we're doing our best. But I really see myself as an instrument when I sing at my children. And I wish my mother and my father would have felt the same way I feel about them. And when I share this experience with them, my mom say, I wish I felt that way when I was your age and you were little. So I guess all I wanted to add is that, to me, I'm an instrument to make my children happy and give them a good life, and hopefully they're going to be kind to others and grow to be who they are supposed to be and follow the karma, and I'm going to help them in the journey, and that's it. So I just wanted to share that.
Thank you. I think we have another TV crew coming in. Sandy, yeah. is there no? Let's see what's going on. Okay. Okay, now it's ABC. Okay, yeah. Okay. Yeah. We just have a couple minutes left. Great discussion. Okay, so we've identified what attachment is, how it causes problems. How do we deal with it? What are some antidotes, as we typically speak of in Buddhism, to attachments? How do we lessen it, or how do we eliminate it completely? Because the Buddha said we can. He said that's completely possible.
Answers.
See, we have a hand, Jill. We have a hand right here. No. Okay, and then here.
That was only like half a hand. That was kind of tentative. But I mean, what I was saying before about love being just, you know, a complete appreciation for things the way that they are, I think that's the way that you would kind of fight attachment. It's not needing anything to work out a certain way, just appreciating it completely the way it is, and like the changes that come, and just looking at them, acknowledging them, and appreciating them.
Okay, thank you.
I think awareness is one of the biggest things.
Mm-hmm.
Realizing that there is change, and because of change, nothing is permanent, and you're able to say, okay, it's here right now, it's gone. You know?
Yeah.
that, what else can you do? I mean, it happens, it happens.
Mm-hmm. So Jill, her hand's been up first, yeah, and then we'll go.
Thank you. What helps me with attachment, I have small children too, and family and, you know, I'm a homemaker. And so what helps me with attachment is, first of all, that realize, like what I explained before, that nothing is permanent. Everything is constantly changing. I am changing. My children are changing. My spouse and everything around me changes. And also, we come here with this karma, this positive karma and this negative karma. And looking at the not so pleasurable experience or problems that come into my life as the result of that karma. And thinking about the negative karma that I am burning it out. So that has really shifted something in my mind to the point where, you know, when I, you know, somebody yells at me or I just, my mind doesn't get disturbed. I look at it and I say, wow, well, you know, I must have yelled 1,000 times before, you know, so now I'm getting back this. And so I'm glad, you know, I'm burning out this negative karma and I can focus on the positive. So that has really helped me.
Thank you.
Those two things.
Okay. One last comment and then we'll have to wind things up.
Or do you want? Heather. Go ahead.
In hearing a lot of our discussion today, one of the things that at least has helped me is truly defining what is happiness. I think a lot of times we connect in our society happiness to those moments of joy or pleasure. And standing back and looking at our own values and truly finding like what does bring happiness, and then finding when we truly listen to somebody, what brings on their happiness. And so I think listening to ourselves, bringing that awareness piece and that moment of awareness, and pausing, a lot of pause. I don't think we pause enough in our society. And even, I'm not a parent, but I'm around a lot of parents. And having that moment of pause is such a challenge. So I commend you for your commitments. but I think that in our fast-paced society, it's, you know, our society does not, especially the Western culture, it's almost the opposite. You know, it's mm-hmm. trying to define happiness for us mm-hmm. as opposed to us finding our happiness and truly defining what that is. And then also in our society, what are those commitments? And everyone's supposed to be overcommitted. And we need to pause and find that moment and define our own happiness.
Okay, thank you. And then as was mentioned earlier, the ultimate antidote to attachment, the way to remove it from our mind stream completely so that it never returns at all, and the Buddha said this was possible, is to develop an understanding of emptiness, the way things truly exist. And that is the way we completely eliminate attachment from our mind stream. So thank you for a great discussion. Did that answer your question, Susan? Thank you for motivating this. And let's see, we'll do our prayers. Jill will lead our prayers, and then we'll have a few announcements.
Master Shanti Davis, prayer. May all beings everywhere, plagued
by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merit. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill.
May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food, May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid, and those bound be free. May the powerless find power, and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain, to dispel the mysteries of the world. And to remind us why we do our Tara mantras with Geshe Sangpo traveling, let's really keep them in our hearts. And we say these mantras for both the Geshes, so it's for their long life and happiness. Om
Tare Tu Re Soha. Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha. Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha. Om Tare Tu Tu Re Soha. Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha. Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha. Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha.
Well, Robbie?
Okay.
No, you go ahead. And
I think most people know why all these camera crews are showing up here. But in case you've had your head under a rock for the past 36 hours, we have, it is almost 100% certain that His Holiness the Dalai Lama will be coming to Raleigh in October. This is literally, after literally decades of inviting him under various auspices, all the way back to the days of Jesse Helms. So a lot of positive karma is really ripening. We anticipate that he'll be here probably for 3 days. This is all happening very last minute. So the schedule, the venues, all of that remain to be determined. So I can't make any announcements. This is not a Kadampa Center event. It's not a City of Raleigh event. It's being organized by a small group of private citizens, though the mayor's participating, but she's participating as a private citizen. Geshe Gelug and Geshe Sangpo, Don Brown, and myself are on the committee, so stay tuned. We'll let you know as soon as things become more definite. But that's extremely exciting news, so it's something to rejoice in. But don't forget, we have the Light of the Path retreat before then, yeah, as if we don't have enough on our plates. So I'm going to turn over to Jill. I'm sure you have some announcements.
We have a few from different people. And before the Light of the Path, what do we have? The gala. Uh-huh. So the 25th anniversary is June 10th at 7 o'clock for those of you who are under rock as well. It's being posted and your invites are in the mail. Everything's going out. So there's a couple teams doing some secret things. It's going to be pretty exciting. One thing I could use a little help with since I'm standing in front of you is someone to look up some addresses for some people in town that might be important. So if I could have a volunteer, I'm just going to grab you right now. Anybody want to help me with that? You. Okay. Talk to me after. Carol and you. Okay, good. This is an easy way to get recruits. Then, let's see. So the night of the event, starting at 7, nobody will volunteer for anything. Absolutely not. I'm not doing anything. I'm partying down with you guys. So we are just going to be having fun together, looking really hot. So that's what we're doing. So not that hot, just good, looking good. So the day of the event, there's going to be a lot of setup. So I'll send some emails out. So if I could have a lot of people coming out to string lights and do some exciting things, that would be great. And we're going to need a major breakdown crew because we got to be back in here Sunday morning. So that's going to be vital that you guys don't just fly away. We'll need some help taking it all back down. Now, let's see what else is on. You're going to announce that. So extensive offerings for the Tara practice last night. So who would like to help with that to take those down? Good. We need a crew of about 4, 5, 6 people. Good. And then the altar, the water bowls and the altar. So who knows, who's done it before that can lead that? Susan Daniel, perfect. So Susan and Kim, if you'll lead that, that would be great. And then I think that's everything. Can you think of anything else? Okay, so Light of the Path is just the plans are amazing. They're cooking right along. So I do want to announce that the children's registration opened a couple days ago. So that's going to happen right in the middle of the retreat. So the Labor Day weekend, and they're going to get to be with Rinpoche, we hope. Everything is coming along very well. So we want to let you know about that. And Susan? Oh, yes, thank you. So Don Hendrick, Don is gone today, that's why I'm winging this. So Don Hendrick, I've met him at Light of the Path, and a lot of you don't know him or haven't heard of him. He is such an amazing, kind, quiet, I haven't heard him teach before, but I can only imagine from the way he's communicated with me that he is a very warm, inspiring teacher. I understand that his goal is to talk about like how the rubber hits the road in our minds and daily life, which I hear a lot of people, like, I hear people wanting that, and I see heads nodding. So I think it's going to be an amazing time with Don. The one thing we forget to do a lot on Sunday mornings is to just simply ask you for support in many ways. So all the teachings and all the visiting teachers, everything we do is all donation only. And it's sometimes we want to hit you in the heart a little bit because it's shocking that that's how we do things. So we need your support on many ways. We have two boxes and texting, little slips of paper, and online giving. But when a teacher comes in town, there's so many expenses that you guys may not know about. And the sponsorships at certain levels are online. And if you sponsor, it's very helpful. If you just donate with his name in the tagline, it's very helpful. So we could use some of those funds coming in. With a lot of money is going out right now. So the bank account's going like that. So we need a little bit going in. Thank you. Steve, you got a microphone.
This being the third Sunday, we have an opportunity for visitors and newcomers to ask questions in a very comfortable atmosphere and answer questions about Kadampa, about FBMT, how we are organized, how this place exists. Like Jill talked about, this doesn't just appear out of nothing. It takes a lot of money, a lot of time. Everything here is done by volunteers. So visitors and newcomers that want to talk about that or ask questions about Kadampa, our FPNT, if you want to meet in the last two or three rows in the back, I'll lead that for a few minutes. Thanks.
And just a couple of announcements about Grounds Day, which is coming up next week, and also the Stupa. If you want to help support the Kadampa Center, we enjoy volunteers in our Grounds Day for the Serenity Gardeners, so please come out and help us with our gardens. We appreciate that. For those who are interested in helping with the Stupa, we finished everything pretty much yesterday. So we are calling it quits for right now. However, due to the fact that the Dalai Lama is coming to Raleigh, there is an aspiration to redo the whole painting of the stupa. So we will need some volunteers then. So please keep that back in your mind. Thank you.
Next Saturday is cleaning and grounds day.
So, yes. So if you're interested in helping with cleaning inside, is that going to be just like inside the studio, the building, not any holy objects or anything? Okay, just general cleaning. Okay, appreciate it.
Thanks. A big thanks to Joey and his
yes. Oh, Elise.
I'm Elise Stable Outreach. Love Notes Project is ongoing. Please pick up little packets of 10 note cards on the back wall across from the shoe rack. We only ask that you put one sentence that's heartfelt and return it to the Kadampa Center, and that will go to Meals on Wheels to be given to somebody who's homebound who really needs an encouraging note of love or support from any one of you. Easy to do, something you can do in spare time, do with your children. Bring one for someone who's a shut-in who wants to help somebody else and can't do so in any other way. So great opportunity. And then return the completed notes again and across from the shoe rack. Thank you.